Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Jordan.
I'm Dan.
How do we do the show again?
It's a podcast where we like to...
It's a podcast where we talk a little bit about Alex Jones. I know nothing about Alex Jones.
Jordan!
Yeah?
Jordan!
Yes!
Jordan!
Yes!
I got a question for you.
Hi. Hi, Dan.
I got a question.
What's that?
All things considered, do you think that the Dirty South or the Midwest was a better place for hip-hop in the late 90s, early 2000s?
All things considered.
All things considered.
All things considered.
Dirty South or the Midwest?
I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, Dan. The Midwest has not had anything going for hip hop for, up until about 10 years ago.
Tell that to Murphy Lee.
So I'm going to go with the Dirty South on this
Tell
one,
that
Dan.
To my man, City Dan, Spud.
Let me tell you something. When I was growing up in, Missouri.
Tell that to DJ Crucial and Fidel.
I knew a ton.
What about Kanye? What about Colin?
I'm just fucking
The Midwest had a lot.
Well, Kanye started out writing for, Jay-Z, and that was in, that was in New York.
But he's also doing production.
He didn't rep Chicago until, I don't know, what, 2002, 2004?
You might
That's
be right.
That's when Jesus Walks went wild?
Yeah, you might be right.
So there's that. And then,
I don't like him that
there's
much.
There's also Common. There's so many people. Yeah. I'm just saying that it wasn't until the early 2000s.
But the St. Lunatics, Nelly, Murphy Lee, all those people coming out of St. Louis were great. What about my man?
St. Louis is the Dirty South.
What about my
Let's
man?
Let's be honest Tech about St. Louis.
Tech Nine.
I don't think Tech Nine is. No, not Tech Nine.
Tech Nine. All right, to the Dirty South.
You know who's not in the Dirty South?
Who's that?
Our new donors.
Oh, that's great.
I'd like to.
Great transition.
Thank you, Dan. I'd like to give out a shout out to some policy wonks. First off, Sean, you're a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you very much, Sean. Karen, you are a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
This one's my favorite. We've got Tasty Troll Bait. You're a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Tasty Troll Bait.
Alrighty, and Michael B, you're a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Coming in hard. Mm. Coming in hot. At the regular policy wonk level is also Allison.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Allison.
Thank you very much, Allison. So, Dan, we're doing this backwards today.
Yes, we are, yeah.
I don't know if everybody's, I think everybody's like, at this point, I think everybody is thinking like, okay, when are you guys going to stop fucking around and do the show?
Yeah, I think that we did that about as well as we could have given the circumstances.
You'd think that, I would, after doing this podcast for 2 years, I would remember the things that you say every single time.
Yeah, you'd think. Yeah, that's interesting to me how little you internalize or listen. That's, it's actually kind of scary. I think, almost everybody who listens to the show probably could. Rattle off exactly how our opening goes.
I don't know.
Apparently not the other guy who does the show.
I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like I've heard it so much. It's just kind of this assumed thing.
Right.
Where I'm familiar with my rhythm, but I have no idea what yours sounds like.
You have no business knowing what it is.
I don't. I'm not the host of the show.
No, but
except
you are
for today. Hey, all right.
So we talked about this a while, like the ideas of like how would it work, or what would it look like were you to step into the Dan chair.
Mm-hmm.
Metaphorically, because I'm still in the same
chair.
You're still
in the same fucking chair.
But what would it look like if you were to take over an episode and you came up with an idea and ran with it? And I'm very excited to see what you bring to the table because, quite frankly, I don't have to do shit.
Yeah, I know.
Get to interrupt
isn't it,
you.
Isn't it good?
Yeah.
It's great.
It's a weird feeling. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it, but.
I don't know. We'll see. This could be a disaster.
Could be.
But it's a wacky Wednesday, so why the fuck not, Dan?
Right. Take risks.
Dan.
Yes.
I don't know if you or any of our listeners know this, but climate change is kind of a thing for me.
It's fake news.
It's kind of one of those things that I think about a lot.
Carbon taxes. It's all an Al Gore scam.
I think it's pretty important.
All right.
So today I have brought to you something, and you need to play the out of context drop.
Is Mars getting cooler? Is one of those planets was getting cooler? There weren't any STVs.
I take that to mean he's asking, did Mars get some new shades?
Yeah.
Is Mars trying to be Spuds McKenzie?
That's right.
Pretty cool.
That's right. We're talking about Pat Robertson.
Oh, shit.
We're not talking about Pat Robertson.
Okay.
Absolutely not. I just like how stupid he is.
Okay.
And it's spectacular.
He is.
We are doing an interview that Mark Moreno did with Pat Robertson. Do you know who Mark Moreno is?
I'm familiar with that name. I don't know too much about him, but I know of him, yeah.
He is the, I mean, head editor and pretty much only writer and the only guy who really runs climatedepot.com.
Oh, okay.
He is a...
I think I might have run into him vaguely in some, like, old episodes of Alex.
Yeah.
I'm almost certain.
I think so, for sure. So this guy is, for me, different from our usual, cast of characters, because this guy is a complete sleazeball. Like, this
That's different.
No. So, hold on now.
Our different
con men are all trying to, they're all going it alone. They're all shooting out for themselves. They're all trying to run their own scams, right?
Yeah.
This dude is gun for hire all the way. This guy does not believe a goddamn word he is saying. He has found his little niche. He gets shit tons of money for it, and he fucking sucks. It is brutal.
Seems right in our wheelhouse.
Yeah. I read his book. It's called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change.
Mm.
And he genuinely should not get an author credit on the book that he wrote, because he writes this. Here's an example of his book. And then this guy said, long quote.
Mm-hmm.
And that proves what this guy said, long quote. And that's what this guy said, long quote. Mm. See? That's it.
He's more of a compiler
than an
author.
He is a quote miner of the worst variety. And he has given an interview with Pat Robertson
That's what this episode is? This dude talking to Pat Robertson?
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy.
You gotta hear this sleazeball. Because I think by the end of this, you will know for a fact that he does not give a fuck.
Are we on the 700 Club? What's going on?
I have no idea. Uh-huh. I did not look into Pat Robertson's side of this interview at all. Mm-hmm. I don't give a fuck about what he has to say. I hate Mark Moreno. So that is how I'm going to lead you into this first clip, where Mark Moreno says something brilliant.
Miami is actually sinking. It's called subsidence. But there's no acceleration in the global sea level, so you cannot link that to man. Mankind is always battling the shores. Sea levels have been rising for 10,000 plus years since the end of the last ice age.
Dan?
Jordan?
Man has always been battling the shores.
I like that turn of phrase. I don't like the context of it necessarily, but I like it. Maybe he should be an author. That's a pretty good use of words.
Man has always been battling the shore, Dan.
Right.
Now, do you think what he said makes any sense?
No. I mean, sure. As words strung together as sentences, yes, but I don't know. I don't know if it proves what I assume is his thesis, that man isn't doing anything that's causing climate change.
I don't think it has anything to do with, his clauses don't actually connect to each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, Miami is sinking and there's no acceleration of the global sea level, so you can't link it to man.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make sense.
Is it sinking, really? Is that what you would call it?
No.
Okay.
It is not sinking.
I wanted to check in on that.
Yeah. Venice is sinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Miami is, what do you think Miami's doing?
Being overwhelmed?
Yeah.
It's different, because sinking, you have to go down for it to be sinking, as opposed to water coming up.
Yep.
So that's a problem, just off the bat. Battling the shores, I can't get over it.
You can't get over it?
That's a good...
You like it?
Yeah.
What do you see?
Visual metaphor. I see like a Norse Viking stabbing a rock.
That's
hitting a beach with a trident.
Yeah.
Something like that.
He's not fighting the water. He's actually fighting the shore itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Sword fight with
too much sand.
Mm-hmm. How do you think rocks got that small to make sand?
Oh, man has been battling the shore.
You bet.
All right. So we do believe in anthropogenic
beach change. Yes, 100%.
The thing is, he is wrong in content and in deed and word and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know. What do you mean man has been battling the shore? Like, are we, like, dams?
I think what he means to say is that, like, we've been fighting against rising water for our entire time on Earth.
That's what he thinks.
I think that's what he's trying to articulate. I don't know if that's true.
Well, Miami is not sinking.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you this right now. Miami is actually being completely and utterly destroyed by climate change.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason is Miami is built almost entirely on limestone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they get their fresh water from. It's called the Biscayne Aquifer. And this naturally kind of filters the water and keeps water fresh. As the sea water rises, that gets covered by salt water. So salt water is seeping into the drinking water. The estimate of...
not good, right?
No, it's not good.
Okay.
You can't drink salt water.
Mm-hmm.
The estimate from the NOAA says that a rise of about a foot of seawater will pretty much end drinking water in Miami.
A foot, that's not... It's not unthinkable.
No, that's not a ton. And in fact, prior to a NASA study in 2018, everybody thought that the regular rise of the sea level was going to be linear.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be a steady, gradual rate. In 2018, a NASA study by Steve Narum, started referencing different satellite data, cross-referencing it with all kinds of other different measurement techniques to see exactly how fast the sea level has been rising since the 1990s. And it is not progressing at a linear rate.
No.
It is increasing by about 6% since 1990 every single year.
So it's almost an exponentially curve.
Exactly. It is a geometric progression, not a linear one.
Right.
Which is why I am very, very unhappy with everybody, because they're still operating under so much of that, like, in 100 years, by 2100,
right,
it will have risen by a foot.
You hear that from people with, weird funders.
Yep.
You hear that sort of rhetoric a lot.
Yeah.
The, you're being alarmist seems to come from people who have links to the fossil fuels and tobacco lobbying interests.
We will see a few of those characters pop up.
Can we go back to Miami for a second?
Sure.
See, here's what makes it worse if Miami ruins that drinking water thing. Like, because, a lot of survivalists...
That people won't live?
Well, that's a problem. But, like, a lot of survivalists, what they do is they'll set up, like, tarps on their house and catch rainwater.
Mm-hmm.
And from a very reputable source, I've heard that in Miami, you can't see a drip on the strip. It's a trip. It does not rain in Miami, but on the plus side, there's ladies half-dressed and fully equipped yelling about how they loved your last hit.
Are you? I'm disappointed that you're not still going. you're so happy with yourself.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Well, the thing is, based on their study, even according to Narum's own quote, that is a conservative estimate, that increase of about 6% each year. It has risen from what they thought the estimate would be, about 2.5 millimeters per year, to now it's looking like it's going to rise by about 3.4 millimeters per year as we continue along. That's a conservative estimate.
Mm-hmm.
That means that basically in about 25 years, if the conservative estimate is right, sea level will have risen by about half a foot.
Not good.
Not good.
Not good.
So that means that in less time than that, sea level will have risen by a foot, and Miami, or less time than the 2100 date.
Right.
Miami will be unlivable.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No more women who are half dressed and fully equipped.
Nope.
Will Smith will not be able to go to Miami.
Uh-uh.
No one will be saying bienvenido a Miami.
Rich people will still be able to go to Miami.
Sure.
They will be able to buy and have their drinking water shipped in.
That's, yeah.
But everybody who lives there? Uh-uh.
Mm-mm.
Miami's gonna go. Now that we know that Miami's gonna go around. We gotta talk about who is trying to fix it. We gotta talk about the environmental movement that is trying to take this and solve this problem. Do you know who owns the environmental movement, Dan?
Oh, George Soros.
George Soros, for sure. But who did he take it from? So Soros does own the modern environmental movement.
You bet.
Of course.
He's sending those eco-terrorists all over the place, trying to get people to stop buying gold.
He hates it.
Hates it.
Hates it. That's why he stole the modern environmental movement from the right, Dan.
Oh.
Mark Moreno has made it clear that the modern environmental movement was hijacked by the left.
Let me ask you when that happened. Was it around the civil rights era?
It was, Dan.
Curious.
Yeah.
Curious.
But do you know who started it in the first place?
Ooh, let me guess. George Wallace.
No, he did not. It was, a lot of people credit the modern environmental movement having been started by a guy named Aldo Leopold.
Okay.
And he was dope as shit.
I know that name.
Yeah. He was this, he was like an 1880s dude. You know those dudes, except for all of his siblings didn't die?
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of his siblings survived. He was that guy who's like, I'm, 4 years old, so it's time for me to set out on my own in the forest.
Right.
Befriend all the animals there. He was top of his class in school, then was top of his class in the next school, and then he decided to go to Yale, right? Why did he choose Yale?
Let me guess. I don't know.
Because the year earlier, they had started a forestry program.
Oh, cool.
So he went to Yale to become the thing that he was when he was 4 years old.
The very new discipline of forestry.
Of being him.
Sure. Yeah.
And then he got a job, working for the Forest Service.
Mm-hmm.
He's out there in the middle of the forest. He's,
tickling bears.
He's like 22.
Right.
Well, back then he wasn't.
No.
Back then he wasn't. Do you know what he was doing? Shooting bears.
Ah, rude.
Shooting bears.
So rude.
He's out in the forest shooting bears.
Celebrating his Second Amendment right to shoot
shooting
bears.
Shooting lions.
Yeah.
Shooting mountain lions.
Sometimes mountain lions gotta go.
Sometimes they gotta go.
Yeah.
Wolves?
Mm.
He's shooting wolves, man.
Mm.
That's almost man's best friend.
That's true. Very yeah. similar.
He correctly decided, after spending all of his time among predators hunting them, he started being like, these fucking dudes are actually pretty cool. I like these predators more than I like these asshole ranchers telling me to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
So he starts becoming a conservationist.
Right.
He starts
Man,
writing.
He starts tickling bears.
He's absolutely tickling bears. Mm. Then he's Dr. Doolittling it.
Right.
He's going out in the forest. He's got his wolf buddy over here. He's got his bear. There's a famous picture of him. They're all holding hands together. It's beautiful. And he is just hog wild with this. That is the guy who started the modern environmental movement. In the 1950s and 60s, everybody read.
And he was on the right.
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, no,
I mean, it's conceivable because like back before.
Right.
You know, the civil rights era, there were like conservative and liberal people in both parties.
Right.
There were wings of each party that had, so like the idea that someone who was maybe a little bit more liberal or progressive could have been a Republican back then.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that sort of thing. And, you know, so I wouldn't have been totally surprised.
Right.
But
that's also one of those things where it's like, do you think the Dixiecrats were on the left or the right?
I mean, spiritually, they're on the right as we understand it now.
Mm-hmm.
But look, I'm just saying that why does this guy think, not Leopold, why does this Moreno guy think that the environmental movement came from the right if the environmental movement came from Leopold? Where is the disconnect?
There isn't one.
Oh.
He's just lying.
Oh.
It's He's just like, saying it.
It's sort of like how Alex will say some, from time to time that Martin Luther King was a Republican.
Yep.
That sort of thing.
Yep. He'll just do this whole like, nah, all these guys, they were on the right. You're
yeah.
ruining it.
Okay.
You're fucking things up. Mm. So here we are at the beginning of the 50s and 60s. We're in the modern environmental movement. Mark Moreno has done his fucking research.
Mm-hmm.
All right. He knows what the problems are and he knows what the left thinks the solutions are.
Other environmental scares, things like resource scarcity. We're going to run out of food. We're going to have famines. We're going to have overpopulation. There's too many people. The global cooling scare. Mm-hmm. And I show that those scares all have the same solutions they're proposing today. It was a different environmental scare, same solution. And the solutions are centralized planning, wealth redistribution, mm-hmm. and sovereignty threatening international organizations.
That smells like Alex.
Yep. Yep.
You know what, though? Like, maybe those are the solutions people suggest because they work.
That is exactly right.
I don't know. Maybe they're very effective at dealing with a broad spectrum of problems.
Uh-huh.
Hmm. Now, that can't be it.
Nope. It's sovereignty threatening. My notes on that are literally just, yep. You got it.
I like knowing that Pat Robertson is just sitting there listening to him. That's kind of a fun visual. What differentiates between the modern environmental movement and the archaic environmental movement.
Well, if he wanted to really be, that guy, mm-hmm. he could probably say that Teddy Roosevelt could have created the modern environmental
movement.
Did he
create movement. The national
parks? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So you could make that argument.
You could make that argument, but, again, that is not hijacking, and that's not the modern environmental movement.
Right.
Like, one of his big things
sort of
about
that. Sort of a proto-environmental.
Exactly. So it didn't, it wasn't a party kind of situation. Mm-hmm. It was, Teddy Roosevelt just really liked killing shit.
Yeah.
And he's like, we better have some more of that shit when I need
people,
it.
People, animals.
He loved it. He was all about it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's just describing the actual solutions to the problem.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing.
Yeah.
And he's doing it in this way of like, I'm making it sound like this is a bad thing. Because all of these scares were, I don't know, does he think they were unfounded?
I think that's what he's trying to convey, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, definitely, when it's like, well, no, it just didn't solve the issues before they killed everybody, or they got too out of control.
Exactly.
Because we had to, and we used centralized power and sovereignty-threatening measures.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Hmm.
Now. What we have done and what they were trying to do when they came to the Paris Agreement.
Remember when all those people were making bullshit up about how toxic waste is bad? Remember that bullshit? Remember
that was
all
terrible.
Those propagandists out there saying you shouldn't bathe in toxic waste and like medical waste should be disposed of in a particular way with regulations and shouldn't, you know, endanger going into the water supply and a bunch of dumb, globalists.
That
trying
is,
to take away the Second Amendment.
That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
I want my sovereignty to shoot the shore.
Yeah, yeah.
Pew, pew, pew. Take that.
Rock.
Take that.
Yeah.
So the Paris Agreement, of course, is one of these sovereignty-taking organizations.
Oh, definitely.
For sure.
Definitely.
They want to steal everybody's sovereignty. Mm-hmm. Now, do you want to know exactly how expensive it is, though?
The Paris Accord itself?
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, what is it? Like 100 pages? Probably 10 cents a page.
It's about that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Depends on if they went to a FedEx shop.
Sure, it could be.
Those copies are, yeah. Mm-hmm.
International rates. I don't know what it is in the pound, in the euro. I don't know. How expensive was it?
I think the answer will surprise you.
Okay.
Well, that has been now analyzed, and it's the most expensive treaty in world history. $100 trillion is the estimated cost. We're already spending $1 trillion a day.
Trillion?
Incredulous Robertson.
That's pretty much the only clip of Robertson you're going to hear.
Trillion?
$100 trillion?
Yeah. I imagine he's fudging that number a little.
A little bit?
Yeah, maybe.
How much?
A lot.
You think so?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I assume that that's probably like just taking all sorts of weird things he could claim are the costs of the treaty. You know, that's just my instinct.
Uh-huh.
But, I think you probably know.
Now, it feels weird, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It feels weird not to know what somebody's saying.
It's very threatening.
It is.
I find it unsettling. But I just have my instincts to go on.
Ah, see, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
Now we
and a lot of Will Smith lyrics. I got plenty more, trust me.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
You're going to go to Yale the moment they open the Will Smith program.
I might go there and demand they start one.
I think that's
I'll
not
be the pioneer of it, like this guy was with forestry.
What's that? What would that be? The modern Wild Wild West movement?
It'd be Willennium Studies. I'm a millennial. Someone's made that joke before.
Oh, for sure.
100%.
For sure. This 100 trillion number comes from one guy.
Please tell me it's Mark Moreno.
Nope.
Oh.
No other scientist, no other accountant, no other anything said anywhere near $100 trillion.
What's Nate Silver got on this?
Exactly. He has not weighed in on the 100-year-long cost of the Paris Agreement.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying it's going to cost $100 trillion by 2100. Now, what does what he is described in Moreno's book as the Danish statistician, Bjorn Lomborg, what does he have a PhD in?
Forestry.
Nope.
Millennial studies.
I wish.
I don't know.
He would be a much nicer guy.
Probably. I'm guessing because you asked me the question, my gut tells me that it's not relevant to this.
Political science.
Okay. It's vaguely relevant, but not, it's not what you're looking for this, like accountancy or something like that is what you want, but business.
He did not disclose, what numbers he was taking.
That seems unethical.
What amounts he was drawing from what countries?
It's hard to peer review now.
He released only a little bit of his method for coming up with this $100 trillion.
I used a pad and pen.
Pretty much.
That's my method.
Nobody knows what he plugged into the machine, but his method was this. I took the amount people are gonna spend on it that I think they're gonna spend on it, and I called it the cost.
Oh, cool. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That checks out.
Right. With no numbers. But well, that's also like saying the United States government is going to cost $100 trillion by 2100.
Sure, sure. It's deceptive. But I mean, the point behind it is probably valid. It'll cost a lot of money in order to, like, you know, retrofit things and, you know, invest in new technologies and stuff like that. But a lot of it will pay dividends of its own.
Exactly.
And that's not accounted for. Well, I mean,
that's absolutely not accounted for.
We don't know because he didn't release his methods.
Absolutely no. The one method he did release was literally that.
Yeah.
I am just counting that.
No deductions for gains and new industries and all right. Cool.
And it's just like saying that the government costs $2 trillion a year when it's like, well, that money doesn't go away.
Right.
That money's not like, it's given to the Paris Agreement and they get to keep it.
Right. This piece of paper is rich as shit.
Right. It goes back into the people. So the net cost of it is actually going to wind up being not just less than $100 trillion, but it's going to be profitable.
Mm-hmm.
According to that
money goes to businesses.
Exactly.
You know, like, it goes to people who will then recirculate them ideally.
Right.
Ideally.
Absolutely.
That's another issue.
Well, but, yeah.
Yeah.
I think my favorite quote from Bjorn Lomborg is from so first off, in the early 2000s, he was like, climate change is real. We got to do something about it. And then in the mid 2000s, he decided climate change was not real.
Ooh.
And that was because of a large amount of money that was given to him.
Weird how that'll change your perspective.
This is going to be a theme, but. Here's my favorite quote from Bjorn Lomborg. He did this in an interview with CBC Radio in 2016. He said, and I can't do a Danish accent.
Oh, I would encourage you not to.
I was going to do Alex's Bernie Sanders, but I think I'll just do this.
Okay.
Most people die from cold deaths.
Wait.
Not heat deaths. And so when temperatures increase, we're going to see about 400,000 more heat deaths because of global warming by mid-century, you know? You hear a lot about those, but you're probably going to see 1.8 million fewer cold deaths.
This guy gets it. As it is now, old people die of heat stroke all the time.
Right.
It happens very commonly.
But old people freeze to death too. And what you don't hear about is that they freeze to death more often. They'll never freeze to death when the world is warm.
That's sunny side thinking. I respect that. That guy, Bjorn's an optimist. He's like a glass is overflowing kind of guy. Cool. Cool. I do respect that. I wish I had a kernel of that in my life. that willingness to look at, like, complete catastrophe and be like, less people could freeze to death, guys. Isn't that cool?
Well, it's also not true.
I would assume. Because the places that people freeze to death are generally not because of the elements and stuff like that. It's often because they can't afford their heating bills.
Exactly.
And things like that, because businesses are fucking them.
Yep.
Generally, I've read a number of stories about stuff like that, and unfortunately, there are a number of, like, homeless people who will freeze on the streets and stuff like that. And again, that's a systemic problem. That's not about how cold it is outside. It was negative 50 here, and if you had a place to be inside, it wasn't going to be the biggest deal in the world. And that was as cold as what, the top of Mount Everest?
Yeah, but if it was global warming, you wouldn't even have to be inside.
That's true. All right, Bjorn. Bjorn, you're a lot of fun.
He goes around and gives these interviews that are just him saying the dumbest shit.
Right.
Like that, what, He does not base the 400,000 number on anything. This is 100% something he pulled from thin air. Mm-hmm. He didn't like later on write a piece justifying the 400,000 number or the 1.8 million fewer cold deaths. He didn't even figure out how many cold deaths there are.
I also don't think that those terms are very defined.
No.
Warm and cold deaths.
Yeah. Hmm.
Less people burn than are frozen into ice cubes.
Yes.
Ergo.
Global warming is good.
Hooray. Dumb.
Oh, yeah. Now, here's the best part, though. Not only is Mark Moreno pointing out that the Paris Accord is far too expensive.
Can't afford it.
Can't afford it. $100 trillion? $100 trillion?
Fiscal responsibility, bro.
Can't do it. But here's what's even worse.
What's that?
It wouldn't even do anything.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Not only would it commit nations to lose sovereignty and start being essentially having to bow to a UN international organization. But it would have, even if you trusted the UN science and Al Gore believed everything they said, it would have no impact on temperatures 100 years from now. So
it wouldn't even do anything.
Cool. All right. Well, in that case, fuck it.
Yep. Nope. He proved it, right?
Too expensive. Wouldn't do shit.
Yep.
I buy it.
That's all he had to do.
All right.
Right?
Been,
he solved
knowledge
it.
Right.
This has been great.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, what he's referencing here is a 2015 MIT study.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was the MIT put together the study of like, okay, let me start. The Paris Agreement is built on every 5 years, each country submits a new proposal, a new pledge. So, the MIT study was, if everybody just did what they did right now, if everybody just did for the 5 year, for forever,
mm-hmm.
there would only be a 0.2 drop in degrees Celsius. So
that's still not nothing, even if that is the all.
Exactly. Exactly.
I see a problem.
Now, what the MIT study also showed was that everybody involved in this is planning on not doing that. The entire point of the Paris Agreement is everybody is doing what they can for the first 5 years.
Right.
And then accelerating that.
The 5 years is like a toe dip, and then you're getting in the pool gradually.
Exactly.
Because you can't just, I mean, you're going to have to eventually now, but like, it's very difficult to totally transition everything.
Yeah.
You know, like on a dime.
Yeah.
And it would be jarring for a lot of countries, especially with less stable economies. So you gotta dip that toe in. You can't cannonball that shit.
Absolutely.
Jackknife.
And in a way, he's right. Like, in a way, that does make sense. What that really proves is the opposite of his point, though.
Mm.
What that really proves is that MIT was putting together a thing that's saying, guys, this is a amazing thing that we've done. This is a promise amongst all nations to fucking try and survive. And what we need to make sure that you're doing with this 5-year proposal is ramping things up,
mm-hmm.
ramping things up. So the MIT put out this study to goose everybody into doing that.
Uh-huh.
And assholes like Mark Moreno are taking those findings and saying, see, the Paris Agreement doesn't work. We don't need to do any of it at all.
Mm.
He's not saying, here's what we need to do instead. Here's what should be done. He's just saying, see, we can't do it. Everybody quit.
Mm.
He doesn't believe any of this shit.
It seems like it would be hard to believe it based on just like what the sources he's pulling from. Or again, it comes down to that, like, if you've read this, you're lying. If you haven't read this, you're lazy. It's one of the two, and it seems like the prior is much more likely.
Oh yeah. He has read all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there is one big specter that we need to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one that our boy Larry Nichols has warned us about in the past.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
You don't mean.
Uh-huh.
This is no more than medieval witchcraft. People believe that the United Nations and the United States EPA can regulate the temperature and control storminess. They used to believe that in the Middle Ages. Those witches can control weather. Those witches are causing crop failure. Now they're blaming our SUVs and our cars.
Witches.
Witches. Always witches.
All right. I think that's lame.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you look into a lot of the history of witches and stuff like that, it was, like, just completely social oppression of women. Like, it was a large piece of the story. Like, women who didn't adhere to the roles that society said that they had to.
They're oppressing our SUVs, Dan.
That is true.
They are oppressing SUVs.
Mm-hmm. That is where, I mean, that's where you kind of get the sense of like, he knows he's talking to Pat Robertson.
Oh yeah.
And that is like, coming up with witches and stuff like that is really like in that wheelhouse of like, you know, you're talking to a zealot, a religious zealot. He's going to love to hear this stuff.
Oh yeah. One who does not understand how big a trillion is.
No.
Absolutely not.
No.
But the good news is that nobody's really worried. You know, after you hear that information and all the information before, you can tell that nobody cares mm-hmm. about climate change.
It's too expensive, it's not going to make a difference, and it's just witches.
Uh-huh.
The public hasn't bought this. According to Gallup polling, there's no change in concern, essentially, from global warming from the 1980s to now.
Phrasing of that is interesting.
A study performed by WIRE Wires Climate Change. They're an organization that studies all these things. They've aggregated polls since the 1980s, which is when he's starting his bullshit, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed a clear rise in awareness regarding climate change all the way up until 2007.
Hmm. Okay.
What happened in 2007?
Bjorn got a bunch of money.
Yes, he did.
That's, I've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? Is that the Paris Accords?
Nope.
Oh.
Paris Accords was 2015.
Okay. 2007, I don't know.
A man named Barack Obama started running for president.
Sure.
And a large amount of right-wing propaganda was centered on tying him together with climate change. In 2007, everyone, up until that point, everyone was becoming more aware of climate change, and everyone across both parties was increasing their concern about that.
Mm-hmm.
In 2007, however, fears of climate change declined among the right only.
Mm.
Everyone, every other thing has gone completely up. There is a massive correlation between the propaganda blitz that was put together by, guess who?
Bjorn?
No.
Mm. I don't know.
I'm
being
fucking
facetious.
Rich.
Yeah,
motherfuckers. Through organizations like Donors Trust.
Sure, that's Coke related.
Oh yeah, this is from a fantastic blog called D-Smog Blog,
mm-hmm.
Which doesn't have a great name, but it's pretty valuable as a resource for climate change funding.
I've run into that site a number of times.
Let's go through some of the things that they have funded, Dan.
The Donors Trust?
Uh-huh.
Oh boy.
What do you think?
I mean, I know a lot of things, stuff that we've talked about
uh-huh.
in the past on our show. Yeah, they get up to a lot of bad business.
From 2002 to 2017, they gave Americans for Prosperity $30,962,331.
Sure, they gave a bunch of money to the Heritage Foundation.
Oh yeah, the Discovery Institute, the Mercatus Center, yeah. Our big boys, Project Veritas.
Yep. Lord Monckton, I'm sure, gets some,
100%. Freedom Works, got about 4 million.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are in everything. And we're gonna find out a little bit more about them.
But that makes,
later on.
That makes sense though, cause like the Donors Trust and the Donors Fund are like places where you hide the source of money, and it's very like Coke related. And then like, Freedom Works and Americans for Prosperity are also Coke linked. Think tank funding, networks. So, like, it makes sense that they would just sort of shuffle money around that way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They have done that consistently, and they've created all of these things purely to get that propaganda to avoid this exact kind of situation.
And hide where the money comes from, because it would delegitimize the messaging that they're trying to put in the world.
Exactly.
It's dirty.
So Moreno's argument eventually comes down to just this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, people have stopped worrying as much about climate change, mainly because the people who give me money, because guess who he gives him a lot of money?
Donors Trust?
Oh, yeah. Started lying to people.
Mm-hmm.
That is exactly what happened.
So his argument is we've been incredibly effective at shifting the public opinion. And therefore you shouldn't care.
Exactly.
Mm.
You got it.
That's not good.
I made people not care, so you shouldn't care.
I guess it is sort of like a demonstration that people are kind of gullible. I don't know what that, I don't know if that helps with the climate argument.
No, no, no. It's
it is interesting.
It really crushes it.
Mm-hmm.
But do you know what's even crazier than the fact that the Paris agreements would cost $100 trillion and they won't even be effective?
Mm-hmm.
And nobody even really cares about climate
change.
I've
heard all this. I've internalized it and I believe it.
Well, this is going to blow your socks off.
Okay.
It's actually backwards. The world's going to get cooler.
What?
Yes. In fact, many scientists, including Russian scientists, solar scientists, are predicting a coming cooling.
Hmm. All right.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't disprove anything.
Nope.
Seems irrelevant.
No, it's going to get colder.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what's going on?
It's just you heard him.
Uh-huh.
It's a coming climate.
You seem weird.
It's an ice age is coming.
You seem weird.
I'm just saying.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Uh-huh.
Ice Age is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other hand.
Do you remember that movie Ice Age? John Leguizamo did a voice?
I do remember that movie.
I worked at a movie theater when the first one came out, and all the commercials were just that character chasing the acorn, the little rat guy. And we had our district manager was in town, and he was given like a little meeting. And he's like, you guys excited about Ice Age? I'm like, I don't know. Whatever. And he's like, it's fun. You see those trailers, a squirrel running after a nut. Like, that happened 20 years ago and it still sticks out in my brain. Like how dismissively he was trying to make us excited about Ice Age.
Ah, a squirrel runs around with a little
chasing
nut.
Chasing that nut.
Hey, he's chasing that nut. How great is that?
So from that, I'm excited that there's an Ice Age coming because animals will talk. People will be chasing down acorns.
Oh yeah.
And animals interspecies will bond. There'll be friendships.
Absolutely.
Which is very exciting.
Which is the whole point of Leopold's work. He wants to bring people together with bears and wolves.
Tickle those bears.
Oh, absolutely. The Ice Age is not coming.
Oh.
No, I'm sorry.
Nah, it's a
The Ice Age bullshit comes from a few different sources. And let me give you an idea of their occupations.
Dennis Leary.
Pretty much. We have predicting a coming Ice Age.
A bookie.
An astrophysicist?
Okay.
All right. That sounds pretty legit.
Neil deGrasse Tyson?
No.
Oh.
A meteorologist? That's almost something.
Doppler Dave out of Columbia, Missouri.
Exactly. And a
Tom
mathematics
Skilling.
Professor. It might as well be Tom Skilling. It's actually a local guy.
Is it?
For real. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Boy.
The meteorologist is like one of those local weathermen. The most prominent guy who is predicting the Ice Age is, oh boy, this is going to be rough. Khabibulo Abdusamatov.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one who claimed that a mini Ice Age would begin in 2014.
Mini Ice Age is like that trailer for the... Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a squirrel chasing a nut.
Yeah.
Do you think a mini Ice Age started in 2014?
I mean, it was really cold last week.
Uh-huh.
But no.
No.
I don't think
no.
so.
I believe, this year is just, or 2018 was now the fourth hottest year ever recorded.
Yeah, I mean, outside of those like 2 days that it was terrible here, it's one of the most mild winters that I remember experiencing in Chicago.
Oh yeah.
I know that doesn't prove anything, like in terms of like the bigger picture, but it is something.
Oh yeah. The issue here is all of these guys. Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. I completely forgot to tell you this. Abdusamatov, oh man. You know what's crazy?
What's that?
He gets his money from Donors Trust.
Oh boy.
Oh yeah.
Oh, noticing yeah. a real trend here.
Uh-huh. But you know what? You don't need to worry. You don't need to worry.
I'm not worried.
Well, because nothing unusual is happening.
What? Me worry?
We escaped the Ice Age. There was no big deal.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's quite literally hundreds of factors that influence the climate. Mm-hmm. So right now they're trying to analyze what's going on. By some estimates, we're at 100-year or more sunspot low activity. And many people are predicting a coming cooling. Just the last 2 years have seen a significant drop in temperature since the height of the last ocean cycle.
See? Nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
100-year low of sunspot activity.
Okay.
Proved it.
All right.
Don't need to worry.
I'm not worried.
No. You shouldn't be worried.
Getting very defensive about how little I need to worry.
You shouldn't be worried at all.
I'm thrilled.
No. And let me tell you something. Mm. Nothing unusual is happening. Nothing out of the ordinary.
Wait, wouldn't the low, like the all-time low of sunspot activity, shouldn't that in and of itself be abnormal?
Nope.
Oh.
Nothing unusual.
Okay.
It's very normal for the sunspot activity to be 100 years low.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. No. Everything is happening normally.
Nothing unusual is happening, whether it's hurricanes, floods, tornadoes. Extreme weather is actually on a stable or declining trend on climate timescale.
Well, it comes out of the sun, doesn't it? I mean, it's...
Oh, boy. Guys just sounds old. His voice is old.
Comes out of the sun.
The hurricanes come out of the sun.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I mean, I think that that's wrong, right? By data, in terms of, like, the severity of extreme weather that we've seen over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so. I mean, it's been quite an escalation.
Oh, yeah. In not just that, but as the Earth is warming, in the past, let's see, between 1958 and 2007, the amount of rain falling in the heaviest storms has risen by nearly 20% in the States.
Mm-hmm.
That's the, no, I'm sorry. That's from 2007 to, 2018.
Mm-hmm.
That is 20%, I'm sorry. 20% rise since then.
Mm-hmm.
That's three times as much as the rise between 1958 and 2007.
Ooh.
So in 11 years, the amount of rain, in the heaviest storms has basically tripled.
I don't understand what you have against water.
I don't know.
Water
don't
is
know.
Delicious.
I don't know. What am I going to say?
Mm.
Now, according to the National Climate Assessment, a team of more than 300 different experts in various fields relating to measuring extreme weather events, the Northeast, just the Northeast, has seen a 74% increase in the amount of rain and snow falling in the heaviest storms.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you see that in, like, Boston and New York have had those, like, really terrible blizzards.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, does Mark Moreno cite anything?
Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
I just remembered that song 10th Avenue Freeze Out by Bruce Springsteen that has a really great saxophone solo. 10th Avenue Freeze Out. That song's about a fucking snowstorm. Ergo, snowstorms have always been bad in New York.
There's nothing to worry about.
Absolutely.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
100-year low in sunspot activity. That's how you know that hurricanes don't happen anymore.
Look, if they're bad enough that the boss is going to write a song about it and how that's when he met the big man, Clarence Clemens, then that means it's always been bad.
It's always been bad.
It's always been bad.
Oh, yeah.
This is all just much ado about nothing. Everything is cool.
No. Everything that he is doing now is shit that he has written about in his bullshit book.
Right.
Do you know who he cites when he says, in the book,
mm-hmm.
this is true?
Bruce Springsteen, please say Bruce Springsteen.
No.
Clarence Clemens, please say Clarence.
His own website.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
That's the intellectual version of self-dealing.
Yeah. No, he literally cites his own website for saying that extreme weather is stable.
Well, I mean, that's the same thing that Alex does, like, citing InfoWars all the fucking time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you understand why I picked this guy,
yeah,
man?
Yeah, totally. There's a lot of connections.
Oh, hell yeah.
The same sort of intellectual, ethical standards and stuff. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hmm.
He's just rambling off things, saying them assertively, and calling it reality.
It's painfully easy to trick someone like Pat Robertson.
I don't think Pat Robertson...
I don't think he's being tricked. You're
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think Pat Robertson gives a fuck.
No. No, no. He just needs to fill a show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's just old.
Yeah. And wants that money.
He wants $100 trillion? But.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the craziest part. Just like Bruce Springsteen proved, of course, that it's always been bad.
Absolutely.
Scientists know that it's always been like that.
And you know what else, too, that Bruce Springsteen taught us?
What?
That blizzard that caused the 10th Avenue freeze out.
Yes.
That song isn't really about the blizzard.
What's it about?
It's about meeting the big man. So if that storm hadn't happened, him and Clarence Clemens wouldn't have gotten together. The big man wouldn't have joined the band.
1.8 million people are not going to freeze this year.
Yes, that's but 2.8 million people are going to find a sax player. And it's worth it. That's the unaccounted for cost, the benefit thing here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, one of the biggest things, that he has that I absolutely despise.
An ego.
Is exactly like Alex. Where it is just, he's doing, so far, here's what he's done. This isn't a problem.
Right.
It's all a lie.
Right.
Even if it was a thing, which I'm not saying it is, we couldn't do anything.
Don't even entertain the possibility that it's a thing.
Exactly.
It wouldn't matter even if it was.
Yeah. And the thing that people are trying to do about it, they're just trying to steal your sovereignty, bro.
Right.
Absolutely. Here's what's even worse. They're making this whole thing up. Scientists are making it all up.
No.
Yep.
Medieval warm period from about 900 to 1300 AD. This was considered the climate optimum. That was the word was optimum. And we had the Renaissance. We had all this crops and vineyards growing, and England had booming production. And then in recent times, they said we have to get rid. UN scientists said we have to get rid of the medieval warm period because we didn't have coal plants and SUVs, and it was inconvenient to explain how something could be as warm or warmer than today. So they went back in the data and they erased the medieval warm period. They erased the 1930s in the United States as the hottest decade. They went back and cooled the past.
They can do that.
Yep. See, earlier he said that witches thought they could control the weather.
Right.
There we go.
They just erased the past.
Yep. They erased the 1930s as the warmest decade in American history.
Oh.
Yeah. The medieval warm period.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear about the medieval warm
period? No, I don't think, I mean, I've heard of it. I've heard those words used before.
Right. Now, what do you think is specific, like, in the medieval warm period, those three words, what do you think is an important word there?
Evil.
Exactly.
Witches.
Witches.
Yeah. Maybe that's why it was warming, because all the witch activity back then.
Well, they were burning all of them.
Absolutely.
Of course, it put all that witch into the air.
All the potential.
Everybody knows witches are the worst greenhouse gas.
Oh, totally. And all the potential energy that's in your cells and stuff gets released when you get burned, especially if you're a witch. Yeah, I mean, it makes total sense. I'm going to write a book about greenhouse witch gas.
Now, the reason that it's important to take a look at the medieval warm period is because when you say medieval, you're describing not just 400 years from 900 to 13 AD. You're describing 400 years in a certain place.
Right. Europe.
Exactly. He is basically saying, see? In for 400 years, it was really warm for white people. That means the climate is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing. Pages. I don't understand. Why do these guys think that scientists get together and they're like, we got to remove this warm period?
Yeah.
We got to take it away. Which scientists? Who?
No. Which scientists?
Which scientists? Yeah. Damn it. It always comes
you answered your own question. Yeah, that does seem like the sort of thing that no one would get away with.
Yeah.
It seems like at least one scientist would be like, huh, you guys have changed this data. It would be the biggest deal in the world.
Exactly. Past global changes, or pages, as they call themselves, they support research that understands the environment, not just, you know, now or the way it's going on, but they try and go back as far as possible. So they've taken ice core samples, tree ring samples, pollen, stalactites, more stuff to see what the overall climate at the world was at that time. And it's fine. It's exactly what we would have expected it to be. There's no medieval warm period for the Earth. It's just for Europe. So when he says, in a certain sense, he does have it right. You know, scientists went back and changed it to correct it.
Well, in essence, give it context.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's the same rise in temperature that we would have expected to see because humans were doing shit. Mm-hmm. Even back then, anthropogenic global climate change was part of the deal. It proves a consistency to the data. It proves that there isn't some sort of hidden, like, this is part of the natural fluctuation of things.
Mm-hmm.
It fits in perfectly with the rest of the data that we see from previous climate tracking.
Right, right.
All they're doing is taking this small little piece of one small little part of all the research that has been done, and they're calling it a proof that global warming isn't real, or proof that climate change isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
That is what they do. Oh, and the organization that has really been touting that medieval warm period, they received $532,000 from Donors Trust.
Of course.
Yeah.
They might want to erase that history.
Are you seeing a pattern?
Yeah, yeah. Firmly established pattern.
I don't know if I can make this any clearer.
Yeah.
I might hammer on this.
I mean, it deserves to be hammered on. All this stuff, it traces back to very similar people who want that rhetoric in the world because it makes it harder for them to do the business that they do. That's where the money that comes into the donors fund comes from.
Right.
Comes from people in like fossil fuel industries and.
Absolutely. And it is one of these things that you kind of know. You already know that all of these guys are pretty much paid shills the whole time. You kind of guessed that.
Yeah.
I went through the citations in his book and I tried to find anyone who did not receive money from Donors Trust or Americans for Prosperity or all of those things.
Yeah.
There were no sources cited any source that he had that said climate change was not real or not an issue or should not be attacked or that it's actually sunspots or anything like that. All of them
mm-hmm.
received money from these organizations.
Yeah, it's like all the people on the same team using each other's information to reinforce their
exactly.
Their shit.
Yep. Absolutely. But you know what? No big deal.
No big deal.
No big deal. Something happened in 2007, 2008. Really pissed everybody off.
Mm-hmm.
Can't think of what it was.
I'm guessing that the cheeky way you're saying that is that it's Obama.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
A recent president who said global warming was the greatest threat facing civilization, didn't he?
And it's a tragedy that there wasn't enough pushback on President Obama for saying that. It's the greatest threat we face.
Hmm.
It's tragedy.
It is tragic.
Also,
I think there's a ton of pushback. Where I'm sitting, it seemed like there was quite a bit.
Yeah.
To the extent that he was unable to really make any kind of, not any kind of, but meaningful progress.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
I have one question about that clip.
How old does Pat Robertson sound?
Do you think Pat Robertson forgot Obama's name or literally cannot bring himself to say Obama's name?
I think he'd be like, Barah. Yeah, he just can't.
Nope. He can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Absolutely fucking insane. And it's so much of this is directly from people hating Obama.
Mm-hmm.
What the...
And around that time, like, Al Gore had gotten out of politics and
right.
was working with that organization that was, like, trying to be, like, an incubator and funder
right.
of a lot of, like, green technologies and stuff. And so that also probably led to... It didn't help.
No.
With these folks. Sort of a perfect storm.
No, but if, like, what happened at that time, was the perfect, like, mixture of these right-wing think tanks absolutely, like, piggybacking on people hating Obama and throwing in the climate change stuff with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it all happened around 2007. The whole reason that all of the climate awareness and all of this stuff dovetails with everybody hating Obama is because of a concerted effort to put the two together to make sure that people who like people in Miami, people in Florida, they're going to lose their homes, their lives, their everything. As the sea levels rise, parts of Florida will no longer be there.
Yeah.
And those people are oftentimes right wing.
Yeah, and it's interesting too because it's not as like a compelling narrative you might want to say is like these people just hated Obama and that's why they funded all this money. But the reality is that Obama was pushing for an agenda that would hurt their business.
Yep.
So it's less like so much of the time on our show it's like fear of a black president.
Yeah.
That sort of thing motivates a lot of people.
Right.
But in this case it's so clearly just like money bottom line related.
Right.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I mean it's so simple too. Like like a lot of that stuff really is super simple.
Oh yeah.
A lot of the science is fairly complicated. Like it's even for me like one of the reasons that it's good for you to do an episode like this is I get a lot of the climate change science, but I don't get it.
Right.
I don't think that I could credibly have a conversation about it. And I think a lot of people are that way. But the business side of it and this sort of stuff is very simple to understand. And it should give people reason to be like, now hold the fuck on. Who are you saying these things? Does that in some way invalidate the message that you're bringing? And I think it does.
Oh yeah.
And that's not to say that someone who accepts money from the Koch brothers or something like that, or one of their foundations or funds, that doesn't mean that everything they say is wrong. It just means that when you hear someone saying the things that they're saying and they have the funding of someone who has a business interest in the message that they're putting out, It behooves you to find out if they're lying.
Right.
It should be like a call to action for everybody. You know, like, you know, if you see that connection, you've got to double check things.
Absolutely.
Can't take it at face value.
Oh, it gets worse.
Oh, boy.
But, like we've said so many times before, this is all normal. Nothing's unusual.
Nothing.
Earth's climate changes all the time in history, Dan. It's no big deal.
Changing climate is in the history of the Earth. Right now, we're in probably the 10% coldest period in the Earth's geologic history. In other words, 90% of the Earth has been warmer than today. We have not had it where we could have ice at both poles like we do now. So geologically speaking, nothing unusual is going on.
So how old is the Earth, Dan?
Was it 6,000 years? Something like that, I think, right?
Roughly.
Theory is the correct theory.
Do you know what's crazy?
What's that?
Even if that was right, the point still stands.
Okay.
The point still stands.
Mm-hmm. It's actually 100 trillion years old,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 100 trillion?
That's old. Almost as old as Pat Robertson's voice sounds.
So if you're going to say in the entirety of the Earth's history, 90% of it has been warmer, huh. Right? So you're talking about 5 billion years.
Yeah.
All right.
So 90% of that, what do we got?
4.5 billion years.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You're trying to just prove you can do math.
Well, I had a rough go of it last time.
Drufke's post really got to you.
Right. So now he's talking about 90% of the Earth's history when it was completely and utterly uninhabitable.
Hmm.
Then you're talking about him saying, oh, well, we didn't have ice at the Earth's poles. We had one giant fucking continent. The
right.
Earth was absolutely hotter back then.
Pangaea.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Now. Changing climate is absolutely in Earth's history. This is the first thing he has said that is unequivocally true.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go through some of the times that the climate has changed.
Let's.
During Earth's history, we have had a lot of life, and we've had a lot of not life.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Life always flourished when there's a balance between CO2, greenhouse gases. There was a ton of methane in the air during the Cretaceous period. That wasn't that big of a deal because during that time there was also a shit ton more oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
So plants grew so much bigger. That's why we could support dinosaurs being as large as they were. So life flourished.
Mm.
Then.
I like the idea of supporting dinosaurs getting big.
Then.
You're gonna get that big. You gotta get it your own. Get a job, you dinosaur. Like that. Yeah, that makes sense, though.
Yeah.
And a lot of the things that lived back then had different central nervous systems than we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the insects and stuff like that were able to thrive back then as opposed to a lot of primate life.
Right. Now, what happens when you see rapid climate change similar to what we're experiencing right now? When you go back through history and you see the history of climate change, because, again, the Earth's climate has changed a bunch of times. What happens?
Oh, I thought you were going to just answer the question. I didn't know you wanted me to answer. I'm guessing A lot of things die.
450 million years ago, during the Middle Cambrian period, a mass extinction occurred. Guess why?
Meteor sent here by God.
Massive climate change.
Oh.
Yep.
Mm.
Due to an increased amount of, yeah. During the Permian era, around 250 years ago, a mass extinction occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Guess why?
God, meteor.
Yep. In the Triassic, around 200 million years ago, a mass extinction occurred. Guess why?
Lost a battle with a shore.
All of them were absolutely losing a battle with the shore. A rapid jump in global temperatures rising sea levels, and ocean acidification.
Yeah, I mean, I went to the Chicago Museum, the Field Museum, not too long ago, and went for, they had a big display or big installation about the various extinctions over time. Mm-hmm. And that was something that was very clearly a piece of the information that was on display in the museum. And that if you go through the entire thing, you get to the end, and then it's like, hey, guess what? We're in one right now.
Yep.
<It's> like, are humans going to be one of the species that go? We're the only ones who are cognizant of the fact that this is going on and historically has, and yet we don't do anything.
Yep.
It's weird. It's weird.
Everybody pretty much knows. Like, it's awful. It is awful. Good news is, though, Antarctica's growing, so we don't need to worry about it.
Well, it's because there's plants to support it.
No big deal.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that it's growing so much. Guess what's happening?
And Antarctica, the South Pole, NASA study shows it's actually growing. The ice, the land-based glacier ice, has been expanding, and it's contributing to a sea level lowering.
Before I respond to that, is that true?
Antarctica is actually growing in land mass.
Mm-hmm.
It is not growing in the sense that glaciers are being rebuilt and the like.
Okay, walk me through that.
All right, so the seas are not lowering.
No.
No study shows that.
It seems, yeah, that's my sense of it.
Not even fake studies. Not even the studies that are funded by these people to prove that that climate change isn't real show that the seas are lowering. Nothing.
Mm. He's just making that up?
He's just making that up.
Cool.
Now, Antarctic sea ice is growing. There are a lot of explanations for that. But mainly it is surrounded by a polar current that separates it from the rest of the way that the oceans are functioning. There's also more snow on Antarctica, which if you have a bunch of snow packed on top of ice, it's going to keep it colder for longer. So it's not going to fall apart. Now, this argument, however, is stupid because since the since the 70s, the Antarctic has gained about 7,300 square miles yearly, which is pretty cool, right?
I guess. I don't want to answer. It could be a really bad thing, right?
In that same time... No, that is a good thing.
Oh, okay.
In that same time period, the Arctic, however, has lost about 2,100 square miles per year.
A lot of it's moving south.
Yeah. Not
like
enough of
retirees it. Going to Florida.
It's a snowbird.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It is fucking stupid to make that argument.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because the sea levels aren't lowering, but because even if Antarctica was growing enough, the Arctic is losing 10 million, so much more ice per year than the Antarctic could ever grow.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lie on both fronts.
Now, would it be a big deal if there was a one-to-one? Like, the Arctic just completely melts off, and all of it, the South Pole gets all of it. Gets all that ice.
I don't think that's
just
how that works.
Scores the ice.
How does it score the ice?
I don't know, but like-
Does it steal it?
Would that be okay? I'm asking your permission to do this.
Would it be okay?
Yeah, I'm asking.
Do you want to do it?
I'm asking specifically, I have a supervillain plan.
Do you want to get some dump trucks together?
You bet.
Get all the ice that the Arctic is losing and then move it down south?
We're probably going to need, like, cargo planes, but yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Maybe some ships. I got some Somali pirates I can hire.
Well, you got to give it up to them.
Yeah.
If they're
great
saving,
at shipping
if
ice.
They're saving the ice, man, you got to give it up to them.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, he's just lying.
Okay.
And
I'm used to that by now.
I know, but it never ceases to amaze me the way this guy lies. Because he is a fucking sleazeball.
I'm guessing unlike the situation between Rihanna and Eminem, you do not love the way he lies.
I don't love the way he lies, no. I do like the situation between Rihanna and Eminem, though.
Okay.
I think they have a strong relationship.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's a lot of people say a relationship should be built on enjoying the way somebody lies.
Well, I mean, the two of them, they helped each other make peace with the monster that lives under their beds.
That's true.
They've done a number of songs together, I just realized. Anyway. Don't know why everything is music references for me today.
I don't know. That's fun.
Yeah. Turns out when I don't have to prepare, all I know is songs.
It is because this is something that he absolutely knows is not true.
Right.
It's not based on anything.
He's like the scientists that he imagines erasing the history. That's kind of what he's doing, but with facts. Like, he can't know that. He can't know that the sea water levels are not lowering.
Right.
He can't know that and still make the arguments that he makes. Therefore, he has to not know that.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's called lying.
He can't know how much ice the Antarctic is gaining without also knowing how much ice the Arctic is losing.
Right.
Because those can only exist in comparison with each other. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're just saying, well, I guess the Antarctic is getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you, nobody has put together a study that is just about, that without pointing out how much ice we're losing.
Right. Cause it's important context.
Right.
Yeah.
The only people who point out that the Antarctic is growing.
I think I know what you're about to say.
Well, do you know what I'm about to say?
I have a premonition.
They are not using their own information. What they're doing is they're taking studies that other people have done.
Who are those people?
Real, legitimate scientists.
Okay.
Who
just
are
misrepresenting
researching. And they're taking the half of it. Every study that they put out that says, look, see, we can prove the Antarctic is growing, is based off of the same data from scientists who have been proving the Antarctic is growing and the Arctic is dying. And they're trying to figure out why there's the difference between them. There are a lot of different explanations, but ultimately what these people are doing is fake research.
Yeah, it's selective information mining.
Absolutely. But you know what this really comes back to?
What's that?
Comes back to Gore.
Because Al Gore, I also feature him saying that we need ubiquitous fertility management. In other words, we need to prevent the number of Africans, because he says Africa is projected to have a huge population increase.
Yep.
I'm not sure what he's saying. I'm not sure what he's saying that Al Gore is saying. I'm not sure anything that's going on at this point.
What he's saying about Al Gore is that Al Gore says that in order to fight climate change, we need to give ubiquitous fertility management. We need to control the population of Africa.
Or provide them with birth control options.
Well, do you want to hear the actual quote?
Yeah.
That Al Gore said?
Yeah.
The real quote is depressing.
I will control Africa.
It's kind of...
I will get the jewels.
It's actually very similar to that. He's good friends with Bob Chapman. The real quote from Al Gore, from this interview that he's talking about. Depressing the rate of child mortality, educating girls, empowering women, and making fertility management ubiquitously available so women can choose how many children and the spacing of children.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it always goes.
Yeah.
I mean, whenever these people are lying about, like, they just want to control the population and all that stuff, it's always, you dig into it and you always find that it's like, everything they're talking about is providing the option, the opportunity, the availability for people. This is a very tired argument.
Oh yeah.
Of these right wing dicks.
Oh yeah.
It's a bummer.
It's
a bummer because it really would be revolutionary aid to people in developing countries. Like the ability to not, be on, like just have random family management.
You know,
that sort of thing. It would be super helpful.
Absolutely.
And that's why people on the right aren't interested in that kind of aid.
Yep.
Because then the developing countries would develop further and that would become a problem.
Yep.
So they'd have their own industries that don't rely on the pillaging of American and European companies.
Right. This guy.
Colonialist powers.
This guy is basically saying that Al Gore wants to control the population of Africa through eugenics.
Right.
And Al Gore is actually saying, I think we should free people.
Yeah. That's how it always goes.
Yeah. Yep.
People suck.
Yeah. Al Gore is involved. You know who else is involved?
I don't know.
Everybody. But it goes all the way to the top.
All the way to the top.
We've got the scientists getting rid of all this data. We've got Al Gore arguing for eugenics. There's nothing to worry about.
Don't tell me Will Smith is
$100 trillion. This guy is a millennial, though. I'll tell you that right now.
And sadly and unfortunately, Pope Francis has lined himself with advisors that have a similar mindset. He's done very anti-Catholic doctrine with his advisors.
He's a Jesuit, right? I mean,
anti-Catholic doctrine.
Okay.
So
wait, the head of the Catholic Church is anti-Catholic?
It goes all the way to the top.
Oh my God!
And do you know why? Do you know why?
Because
Pope Francis said we should worry about climate change.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to have to get into Vatican III pretty soon.
Yep.
Based on
that's
how bad this is turning for the conservative folk. There's going to be another schism.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's all because of climate change.
Right.
All of this stuff is, I love it whenever anybody throws in the Pope. Like this entire interview has only, you know, like he's just making false bullshit and just saying it out loud. And then all of a sudden he's just like, and you know what? Pope does it too.
Well, he knows that Pat Robertson's an evangelical and has a healthy distrust.
That's true.
Unhealthy distrust of the papists and shit like that.
So, I didn't even think of that. That's a good point. Yeah.
He has a real skepticism of Catholicism. So it makes sense that he would try and throw that enemy in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't even consider that. Yeah. Of course. He's just talking to his audience.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair. Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him for really playing Pat Robertson like an idiot. Yeah.
This guy would do well at a stand-up open mic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got Al Gore.
Right.
He's got the Pope. And he's got all these scientists who are changing data. Have you ever heard that 97% of scientists agree?
I have heard that.
That climate change is real?
I've generally heard that from people like him. Who are attacking that.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, that number, there's nuance to it that's not as simple as the 97% number. But I'm going to bet that you're going to tell me what the truth is.
Well, there are some shocking things that Mark is about to tell us.
Oh, boy.
And Al Gore claimed back in the early 90s that there were no science, that all scientists agreed. Now, this 97% I point out in the book in one of the studies wasn't even 97 scientists. They actually got 77 scientists anonymous. We don't know who they are. And they claimed a 97% consensus.
They didn't even get 97 scientists, Dan.
That's fun.
The 97, because I've always wanted to look into the 97% thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you listen to that, even if you are on the left and you are like, not a climate change bullshit fuckface, you know? You look at that and you hear 97% and you're like, that doesn't, I mean, I guess.
Who are those 3%?
And it's also a symbol. It's just a symbol of like, look, this is overwhelming consensus.
Yeah.
The 97% number isn't as important as the symbol that it represents.
Yeah.
So the 97% number is actually based around two studies. Naomi Oreskes put together a 2004 study that produced the first 97% result.
Hell yeah.
What she did was she analyzed around 1,000 studies that mentioned climate change. Of the studies that found a result and then supplied an opinion. So they went through their, information. They found this change or this thing. They confirmed or denied this thing and then supplied an opinion as to why it was going on. Of those studies, 97% agreed that anthropogenic climate change is the case, mm-hmm. is real. What she did though was she did a like nexus search of not nexus, but you know, the simple search there of papers looking at keywords, peer reviewed papers. She wound up throwing away half of those papers because they didn't
fit the criteria.
Exactly. They didn't really matter. And then she disqualified the ones that came up with a, like.
Inconclusive
results. Exactly. Yeah. And then didn't provide an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know and we're not sure.
Right. That's not useful for her, what it would be, overview.
Exactly.
Study.
Exactly. So at the end of the day, she got 97% of those papers. All of them agreed that anthropogenic climate change was the truth of it.
The driver of,
right. So it's not exactly like that's 97% of all scientists. In 2013, John Cook and the people that were working with him at the time tried to repeat that study. And they found almost exactly the same result.
Using different studies? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Using different studies, and they went through the abstract.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't even bother with like finding a result or anything like that. Just what did these guys summarize their findings as? And 97% of them wound up being anthropogenic climate change. Mm-hmm. This is the reality of the 97% number is closer to this. If you were to survey climatologists, people who only study the climate, not just climate change, but just like, hey, all of that stuff, the real number would be, if not 100%, 99.9%.
Right.
If you study, if you go through all non-climatologists, everybody who is considered a scientist and doing research that is related to climate change, you get closer to like 92 to 95%.
Mm-hmm.
But again, of all of those studies, the only people that will come out on record, the only people that will come out publicly as, and like advertise their research, guess who funds their studies?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, you do.
No idea.
Yeah, you do.
No idea.
Yeah. So the 97% claim is both true and, I don't know, almost less impactful.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would rather hear them say, 100% of climatologists, the people whose entire lives are dedicated to studying the climate, agree that climate change is happening.
Yeah. But I bet that some of that 3% isn't even like, denying climate change is anthropogenic.
Right.
Like, I imagine some of it is just ambivalent, neutral results in their commentary or whatever. Like, we weren't able to find any evidence of this, but it, you know, it doesn't disqualify the possibility. Like, that sort of thing. So,
well, in the, that's the thing. In the Naomi Oreskes studies from, 2004, when she was going through, the papers that qualified, she did include the ones that supplied an opinion. And the opinion genuinely was, this is not attributable to anthropogenic climate change.
But that doesn't mean that anthropogenic exactly. climate change isn't a primary driver of climate change.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that doesn't, like, that 3% is probably even, like, that's an illusion in and of itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This whole thing is, it's just manufactured in a way that it is so fucking disgusting. It really is.
Yeah, it's distasteful.
Because the argument that you would come back to, right, is I say, oh, the only scientists who come out on record is saying that it's not anthropogenic climate change. They're all paid by blah.
Right.
And then the right wing would come back and say, well,
you're a conspiracy theorist.
No.
You hate business and sovereignty.
Well, of course they would say that.
Right.
But they would also say like, oh yeah, well, these scientists are paid by George Soros or whatever it is like that. The biggest difference is that a climatologist would still be studying the climate if climate change wasn't happening.
That's true.
That's their job. The climate deniers legitimately would not have a job if there was not climate change. The climatologists would still study the climate.
Yeah, there's a parasitic relationship.
Exactly.
It's a good hustle.
Yeah.
They probably make a lot more than us.
They absolutely do.
Jordan, new idea. Start denying climate change.
I think it might be a little too late in the episode for me to get there.
Yeah, yeah, I realize that now.
Yeah.
This is probably going to look bad if we do make that pivot. Try and court some donor fund money, but
well, I've significantly proven my point, and now I shall deny climate change. Mm. Much like
now that I've got it out of my system.
Now that I got Bjorn Lomborg money coming out of here,
Bjorn.
Yeah. Now, what do they use the 97% claim to do?
I mean, what does who use it for?
I ask yourself that question.
I just did. I asked you that question.
Everybody.
Okay.
Everybody. They use it to do something awful.
And a UN scientist said the 97% claim was pulled out of thin air. They use that to bully people. In other words, you don't know enough about science, you can't challenge it. It's like
bullies.
They're such bullies.
They're bullies.
They're such bullies.
Mm.
I could not find a UN scientist who said it was pulled out of thin air.
Lord Monckton.
Okay, well, I suppose that might actually be
fake
there.
Fake Lord Monckton.
He is cited in
his book?
He is cited in Mark Morano's book at least 15 times.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Of course he is. Crazy old kook Lord Monckton.
Oh, yeah. It's just
that scamp.
This infuriates me because his book opens with the line, "I am not a scientist."
That's a good start.
That's a great start, right?
Yeah.
Climate, the politically incorrect guide to climate change.
I am a hatchet man.
Yeah, exactly.
I am a hack.
And they use it to bully people.
Well, I mean, there's that. And then also in that clip, you know, the idea, the unnamed UN scientist is also probably pandering to Pat Robertson because he's an anti-UN guy.
Uh-huh.
So he believes it has to do with like the coming revelation.
Yep.
So the Antichrist kind of nonsense. So mm-hmm. I think that is also him playing the room a little. I would be interested to ask him who he's talking about, because if you can't find an example of who he might be talking about, then
I mean, you do make a good point. It probably is Lord Monckton,
because he does show up at the UN and cause trouble from time to time.
Right.
He does get kicked out of conferences.
Right. But it is,
he was invited to one not too long ago.
But it is that like an unnamed climate scientist.
Generally, I find when you don't name something, it's because you don't want people to be able to look into it.
Yep.
That's generally speaking, when you're making a persuasive kind of speech, you don't use specifics. It's because you don't have the specifics.
Uh-huh.
That's what I've learned in the last 2 years.
Oh, yeah. That's it is ridiculous to me that this guy, because this guy has not just done Pat Robertson's show. This guy has been on actual TV.
I honestly also think he's been on InfoWars.
You think so?
Yeah. The more I hear his voice, more I'm sort of like, I think I know this guy.
I just hate it. He's such a used car salesman.
Yeah.
I despise his voice.
Yeah. It seems too that like, and you know, we're not listening to the whole interview, but these glimpses that you provided definitely, it leads me to believe that he's not engaging with the full argument he's even trying to make.
Uh-uh.
There's a lot of like, look over here, kind of stuff.
All over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is almost the full interview.
Oh.
To be honest, I've
Pat Robertson isn't known for his in-depth.
Right, exactly. It's not like his questions are probing. He's just throwing up softballs.
Then muttering.
Is Mars getting colder?
No, cool.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
Mars is so cool.
he's, and so, all I'm really cutting out of this interview is like him going, and the scientists, like that's really what I'm cutting out.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a few chunks where it's like, I don't need to, fine. You pull your bullshit. You know that's not true. And even while he's saying completely not true stuff, the stuff that I cut out was him like almost winking to the audience, like with a giant neon wink sign of like, you and I both know this shit isn't true, but we're all here together.
Mm-hmm.
Like that kind of stuff. All I wanted to do is grab the stuff that it sounds like he's really trying to sell you on.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of the stuff that I've grabbed so far, he really wants you to believe it. You know? Like what do you get from his tone of voice and assholery?
All I remember right now actually is just the fighting ashore, the visual of that. That's really all that I'm going to walk away from this with.
Oh my God.
It seems like I am taking on your role. Perfectly. Not listening at all.
You son of a bitch.
But I value it for that. You know, I'll probably dream of that later.
But the real villains.
Oh boy.
The real villains of this whole thing. Weather comes from the sun.
Right.
So we like that.
Oh.
According to Pat Robertson, it all comes from the sun.
But the sun is out of pocket, so we should be mad at it.
What do you mean, an out-of-pocket expense?
It's
not covered by
insurance? No, it's just out of line. We've got to check the sun.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, it's at a 100-year low sunspot activity. I think we've been doing a great job.
No, kick it up a little bit.
All right. But just like the scientists who snuck in and removed the 1930s.
Those were villains.
There's an even smaller core of scientists who are even worse.
Ganondorf.
And I'm going to tell you their biggest crime right now. Or actually, Mark is.
Well, it's actually, I point out, a core of activist UN scientists, people like Michael Oppenheimer, mm-hmm. who took money from Barbara Streisand, $250,000.
Whoa.
Yep.
Barbara Streisand.
It's Barbara Streisand the whole time.
Holy shit.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know it went this deep.
Oh, it goes all the way to the Pope.
To Babs?
And Barbara Streisand.
Oh, God. Not Barbara.
Do you know what? Do you know what's my favorite part of this quote? This quote comes from one place. Or the Barbara Streisand thing.
Was it from Aaron Russo?
Comes from one place.
Was that who?
Senator James Inhofe.
Oh, Jim Inhofe, that motherfucker.
Yeah, or Inhofe, yeah.
He's also one of Alex's sources about martial law being threatened and stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That guy's a dick.
He's an absolute dick.
Yeah.
Do you want to know who wrote his speeches?
Aaron Russo.
Nope.
Oh.
Do you want to know who wrote his speeches whenever he said that Barbara Streisand was behind a core of climate activists?
Fuck it. It's Mark Moreno.
It
isn't
is it? Mark Moreno.
Son of a bitch. I thought there's no way that's who it is, but it's gotta
totally
be.
Him. Yep. It is 100% him. Mark Moreno.
This sneaky asshole.
Yep.
I wrote the speech for this other guy to deliver and then I cited it.
Yep.
That's
no one knows. And when Barbara Streisand was asked about it, she was like, first I heard of this shit.
That's a crazy magic trick of propaganda.
He just hates Yentl.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, like, in terms of when I look at, like, Alex doesn't have the ability to do something like that.
Uh-uh.
So seeing someone who got a fucking senator say something so he could then use it for his own.
Yep.
Like, that's
15
awesome.
Years later. That's 15 years later.
Awesome.
No one else has said Barbara Streisand. I looked it up for forever.
I mean, she's a super left-leaning celebrity. So
for sure.
She comes up as a target.
Yeah, for sure. But she has not given $250,000 to literally anyone.
Not Oppenheimer?
Nope.
Uh-uh. Any relation to the nuke guy? I
actually, probably.
Death. The destroyer.
I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't know. But we got to talk about the heroes, Dan.
Do we?
We got to talk about the heroes, like Will John
Smith.
Wayne. John Wayne and a Quiet Man.
Mm-hmm.
Single men fighting against a system that is designed to destroy them. So we have all these activist scientists being paid by Barbara Streisand with that Yentl 2 money.
Right.
But we have some heroes.
Also,
Dan.
By the way, $250,000 isn't going to do shit. Like, that's
no.
We're really burying the lead on that. That is that that's not that much money in terms of actually going through with like a high level study.
Let's just go back.
Funding that these fucking places need to operate like actual labs and science, like there's endowments and like there's so much like it, yeah. Anyway,
let's just go back. Donors Trust gave Americans for Prosperity $30,962,331.
Yeah.
So we have these hero scientists.
And that's just stuff you can trace.
Yeah.
Like there's even more.
Oh, yeah.
Going around that's not on the books.
100%.
Or it is on the books, but it's like covered by free speech kind of ideas and
pretty
stuff
much.
Like that. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Money is speech.
Dan?
Hmm.
Talked a lot about Donors Trust.
It's true, we have.
Talked a lot about how these guys give these money.
Yeah.
But they're giving it to the heroes, Dan.
Okay.
And there are a few scientists who are willing to buck the trend.
Really thrilled to hear that.
And one of the scientists, a Princeton physicist, I point out in the book, he says we're currently in a carbon dioxide famine on Earth.
Sounds like Alex.
Famine?
Yeah, we're carbon dioxide deprived.
Oh,
I think actually now that I hear him like do this again, like this unnamed Princeton scientist, I think it's also him just realizing that Robertson doesn't give a fuck. Why should I say the name? He doesn't care.
Right.
It's not going to mean anything to him or his audience.
Nope.
So maybe that is a real scientist.
This guy is a real scientist and I looked him down.
Oh boy.
Or I looked him up. I found him.
Looked him up and down.
I looked him up and down and I found him wanting. This dude is a fucking monster. The Princeton physicist he's talking about is Dr.
Wait.
Yep.
Webster Tarpley.
No.
Wait, he went to Yale.
Yeah.
Never mind.
He got a forestry degree, I believe.
That's right.
Yeah.
He started forestry.
this guy is Dr. William Happer.
Actually, he got a degree in Robert Forrester studies. Speaking of old movies.
Do you know what's crazy? He found Forrester.
Yeah. Bolt the door if you're coming in.
Punch the keys, damn it!
I always think, anytime I'm typing, I'm always like, bah!
You're the man now, dog!
You're the man now, dog.
That trailer played
a
on a
million
loop
times,
in the lobby of the theater I worked in.
Yeah.
I'll be 70 years old. I'll still be able to just rattle
You're
off,
the man now.
You're the man now, dog.
It's What a fucking terrible movie that I thought was good.
That movie, goddamn.
Yeah. Well, our boy, the Princeton physicist,
mm-hmm.
is Dr. William Happer.
Okay.
He is, by all accounts, a really good physicist.
All right.
Yeah.
I buy it.
That's cool.
Princeton is not, like, uncredible.
No, he's a really good physicist. He was also the director of the George C. Marshall Institute until 2015. You know about them, right?
Nope.
The George C. Marshall Institute was about two things. Strategic defense.
And beer pong.
And science policy. No. Pretty much. It's pretty much.
Yeah.
But in 2015, the strategic defense part of the George C. Marshall Institute was like, we gotta get away from Dr. William Happer. Do you know why? Because he's a fucking crazy climate denial monster.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, we're not getting shit because of you. Because you're so fucking crazy.
Hmm.
So he split the George C. Marshall Institute, and he took over the climate science part and created the CO2 Coalition. That, as we go along, when the George C. Marshall Institute closed down in 2015, it had to, because it was only taking in $300,000 in donations. And expenses were at about $500,000.
That's untenable.
Yeah. Now, this year, or actually last year, according to the CO2 Coalition's nonprofit exemption application, they will receive a total of $1.5 million in gifts.
Bit of a jump.
Yeah. And it only spent about $1.1 million.
That's also a jump.
Uh-huh. Now.
Don't do it.
In 2015, Happer was the target of a sting operation, Dan.
Oh, no. Was it O'Keefe?
No. It was even worse.
The feds?
It was a Greenpeace sting operation.
Oh, nice.
Uh-huh. Here's the short version. These activists posed as your Koch brothers or the like,
mm-hmm.
and they went to him and they said, we need a study that proves what we want it to prove. And he said, I can do that for you.
You got it.
I can do that for you. And they're like, how much do we need to pay you? And he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. We got to avoid the look of impropriety. However, if you were to make a donation to the CO2 Coalition, well, then it's all on the up and up.
Right, right.
This is the absolute hammer. All of these people are paid first.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do their studies.
Right.
That sting operation has been played out over and over and over again. So when I say, like, donors trust is funding these studies, they're not funding them before the research happens.
And they're funding it with the explicit understanding that the study will find the conclusion that is desired.
Exactly.
Which is why you pay up front.
This is why you pay up front.
And when you're saying that this sting has happened over and over again, I believe that it's probably like happened a bunch of times with people doing sting operations.
Yeah.
But then the exact same thing, but without it being a sting operation, happens over and over and over and over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
It's how the bread gets made, as it were.
Now, that was done in 2015. How do you think CO2 Coalition is doing now?
I bet they got it's tough to predict because the world is so stupid. Like, you would want to say he's in prison and that the thing is shut down, but because we live in a dark, dark timeline, I would say he's probably super rich and they're making way more money.
Oh, yeah! 2018 has him getting close to $1 million this year. Or that year.
Well.
I'm sorry, the $1.5 million that I was referencing was between 2016 and 2017.
Uh-huh.
So that was 2 years.
Right.
This year he has grown even more.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yep.
Almost a doubling.
Yeah.
Well, 33% or so.
Exactly.
Don't judge my math.
His quote, which I find very funny, in an interview, he said, "Well, I don't think that the laws of nature, physics, and chemistry have changed in 80 million years. 80 million years ago, the Earth was a very prosperous place, and there's no reason to think it will suddenly become bad now."
Prosperous is a weird word.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with him. I mean, in terms of the like laws of science and physics haven't changed. We didn't, you know, those are just immutable.
Yep, no. All of that is true.
But his conclusion is so vague as to be meaningless.
Yep.
Nah. Still like him more than Bjorn.
Yeah, Bjorn is a piece of shit.
No, nothing is going to touch Mark Moreno's tricking Jim Inhofe. That is like...
Isn't that solid?
That's a revelation.
That is solid.
God, it's like a triple Lindy. Very impressive.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Who else? Oh, just to hammer this point home, Happer as publicly praised, let's see, James O'Keefe multiple times.
Seems like he wouldn't want to praise people who do the things that got him into trouble.
Right. So, Mark Moreno publicly praised James O'Keefe.
Of course.
Many, many times.
Of course.
So these sting operations, they work. Mm-hmm. They're great. But we have got a very strong female lead coming up. And surprise, Mark Moreno is not stoked about that.
I interviewed the UN climate chief. She said, Cristina Figueres, we seek a centralized transformation that will make life on planet Earth very different. That's the UN climate chief.
I don't see anything bad about that sentence.
Nope.
He's saying it like it's some sort of really evil sentiment. And I just hear that. I hear like, yeah, I think we do need to fundamentally change a whole bunch of the decisions that we were making we didn't realize were bad.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Cristina Figueres is fucking dope. Mm-hmm. She has had a badass career. At no point in time has she done, like, she is one of those characters, but more especially the current UN climate chief, is Patricia Espinosa. And she has also had a cool ass career. One thing that you can go back through with the UN climate chiefs is that they have, ultimately.
I believe it's climate's chief.
Ah, I apologize. you're actually attorneys general.
Right.
As they are, given very, very little power. They have no ability to really affect anything. All of them though, have come to this position through being fucking amazing at their jobs. Mm-hmm. Like, these are people who are career diplomats and career scientists who all have given a fuck the whole time. Like, for instance, with the current climate chief, Patricia Espinosa, she has been a career diplomat for Mexico basically since she was like 25. She's worked nonstop for women around the world. Everywhere she goes, she has had a positive effect. And it is Patricia Espinosa who a lot of people give credit to getting the Paris Accord done before she was the UN's climate chief. Mm-hmm. She would go through every place that she could. She has an unimpeachable record. Her fucking sales pitch to all of these people was incredible enough that people give her a top honor in terms of getting the Paris Agreement signed. That is who this guy is saying is very bad, because she said things will make life on Earth different.
Yeah.
That's it.
Different doesn't mean worse.
Nope. No, it does not. Well, let me tell you something. Guess who this guy hero worships? And it's not just Senator James Inhofe.
I don't know if he even worships that guy. It seems like he just used him.
Yeah, I would say that's probably right.
Boz Skaggs.
Once he stopped, once Moreno stopped being Inhofe's aide and speechwriter and shit, he almost immediately started climatedepot.com. And that was entirely because his connection to Inhofe led him to his connection to Donors Trust.
Right.
All of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. That networking, that Beltway networking.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. And he is.
We gotta get to DC, man.
We cannot get to DC.
We gotta go to DC.
We would be eaten alive.
Yeah, probably.
You know who else was eaten alive by DC?
Who's that?
We'll find out.
Scott Pruitt, Donald Trump's EPA chief, has done what no other Republican EPA, he's stood up to the climate change establishment.
Okay.
Yeah. Scott Pruitt.
He's a man among men.
Scott Pruitt is a piece of shit.
I didn't realize this interview was that current.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
This is from 2018.
I just assumed this was like maybe 5 years ago or something. That's nope. crazy.
This was last year.
It's weird.
This is when Pruitt was still the EPA head.
Right. So it does put it in that time frame.
Yeah. Who, of course, was eaten alive because he's a giant piece of shit.
Yeah.
There are some fun things that I found out about Scott Pruitt. Everybody, if you don't know the evil that Scott Pruitt has done, not just his, like, scandals and the cheating and stealing and misusing public funds and fucking everybody over for no reason. Scott Pruitt has destroyed the EPA from the inside, and it is only going to get worse. But if you are, you know, everybody already knows the scandals and shit. So I wanted to look more into Scott Pruitt. And he and I share something that is deeply close to my heart, which
you
is a love
both
of
drink Jameson and ginger
baseball.
Oh,
a love of baseball. Scott Pruitt had a moment that I liken to Hitler getting denied from art school.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was asked to try out for the Cincinnati Reds. He was a second baseman, and if he had made it, we would not have had to deal with Scott Pruitt at all.
Well, we might have just on our fantasy teams. Have to deal with his
pretty much
shitty wheels.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
He played baseball for Georgetown.
All right.
And his teammates gave him the nickname the Possum.
Oh. That's not a bad nickname.
No, it's not?
Well, just like
for a baseball player?
Linguistically, it's not a bad name, but it does seem to imply traits that aren't conducive to baseball. Also, second base is like you can't just slouch on that base. You know, there's a lot of plays that happen that involve second base.
Second base is where you hide the coach's kid.
Well, it's not like right field.
No.
That's where you bury somebody,
no,
right?
Left that field? Is not. No, right field is where you
left
bury
field.
Well, you can put somebody in left field that's not
sucks.
That good. But you bury somebody in right field, you know, only because they're an amazing hitter. Whereas the second baseman is the coach's kid. The second baseman is the kid who, like, he's all scrappy. Mm-hmm. He works real hard. He's got all those intangibles.
Those are absolutely.
But he hits 240.
Those are absolutely not traits that I associate with the coach's son, being scrappy and trying really hard.
That's, well, that's, in baseball, that's what, whatever.
You don't want to put him in the hot corner. You don't want to put him on first.
Uh-uh. No, you definitely don't. First is where you get
it's interesting.
Your
There's cat. You know, the more you think about it, there are very few unessential positions in baseball. This has been my TED talk about baseball. All I know about baseball is from watching a little bit of it, playing fantasy baseball with my buddies, knowing nothing about baseball
right.
for like 2 years and then winning the league.
Winning the league, of course.
And Torrey Hunter's great quote, baseball is a hard game. First you gotta hit a ball, then you gotta get it past like nine dudes.
Torrey Hunter was cool.
Which I think is a great
Torrey Hunter is
encapsulation
awesome.
Of the sport. I like that.
Yeah, Scott Pruitt is a giant piece of shit.
Did you find any of his, like, stats?
No,
because
apparently.
Because it did come up to me. Remember we were talking about Ron Paul, playing congressional baseball?
And he hit the only home run?
Well, no. That, yeah. We found out that that's not true. Other people have hit home runs since then, but I think he hit the first one.
He's the first one. Okay.
But also, like, I thought, like, there's no way anyone's gonna have records of this. There's records of that.
Oh, yeah.
And Ron Paul was apparently pretty good. Alex wasn't talking to all that much shit.
Oh, yeah.
So I wonder what Scott Pruitt was like. Like, do you have any steals?
Well, he got a tryout from Cincinnati.
He couldn't have been that bad.
The
then.
Cincinnati. No. He was actually,
but this is also the
everybody
Reds
said
back
he was
then.
He was a pretty good baseball player.
Mm-hmm. Could have made the show.
Look, if you hit like 300 in college, it doesn't translate to the majors.
Certainly not.
No, you gotta hit like 450 to really get, out of there. But, Scott Pruitt grew up in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, which is a rich-ass suburb outside of Tulsa.
It's where John Travolta grew up.
Now, it
he
is
He was in that movie,
fitting.
Broken Arrow. Wasn't he? Shit. Maybe? Fuck.
I don't think so.
I don't know who was in that movie.
No. John Travolta was in Broken Arrow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You're right.
My reference was very unconfident.
Now I'm nervous because I might be wrong. Now I'm Mandela affecting you.
Oh, no, Berenstain Arrow.
Actually, it was Arrow. It was Nicolas Cage in Broken Arrow, but this was after Face Off, so they had already switched.
Oh,
by then.
That's right.
Yeah.
Easy to make that mistake.
The reason that it's fitting that Scott Pruitt grew up in Broken Arrow, is because Broken Arrow got its name, because that is one of the places that Andrew Jackson hounded Native Americans to during the Trail of Tears.
Yep.
And Broken Arrow was then once again stolen from the Native Americans by energy and oil interests in Oklahoma. And Scott Pruitt is doing, or did, everything possible to continue that legacy.
Was it a situation where his family was in those businesses and that's why he was growing up there?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
You kind of get that sense.
Oh, yeah. Scott Pruitt, and this is the thing that I am, like, of course this is true. Scott Pruitt is a member of First Baptist of Broken Arrow, mm-hmm. which is a fucking mega church.
Right.
It is a disgusting, fucking monstrous place. To give you an example, one of their pastors is Adam Mask, and he is like the cool pastor. He's got tattoos on his arms. He's the one who's outreaching, and he's like, look, I've been in the shit, man.
I've been doing this. As a 17-year-old girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly. He recently wrote, this is recently, mm-hmm. this is like 2 days ago.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Very recent.
And this is on a blog post, so you know we got all caps going on over the place.
Hell yeah.
I'll try and read this in the all caps that he wants it to be.
Okay.
Pride arises out of doubt that God truly makes a better God over our lives than we do.
But can you start that over?
Sure.
I wasn't distracted by the yelling. Uh-huh. I was just distracted by the structure of that sentence.
Exactly.
I need it one more time.
All right. Pride arises out of doubt that God truly makes a better God over our lives than we do.
Okay, I track it
now. Do you get it?
Yeah.
Adultery! Sex outside of marriage!
Wait, the sex outside of marriage is all caps too?
Because
I was thinking that at this point he's just going to capitalize all of the seven deadly sins.
No. We're not doing...
We had pride and... I guess adultery isn't one of the sins, but you could say that's lust.
Oh, we're doing all caps and this is what this is about.
Okay.
Adultery, sex outside of marriage, homosexuality, all lusts stem from the doubt that God's planned design for physical intimacy is to be between one man and one woman in the confines of marriage. Mm. So they're great.
Mm-hmm. Don't fuck.
Yep.
I mean, that doesn't, like, I know that is not great and you never like to hear it, but that doesn't stray too far outside of, like, the sort of things you hear in a lot of churches. So, like,
right. No.
That just seems like a, you know.
No, I just like adding that on there because you know what Scott Pruitt's done. Oh, yeah. And one thing about Scott Pruitt is that during his run for Attorney General, he took a lot of money from.
Don't do it to him. Please, Hammer, don't hurt him.
Don't trust him.
Of course.
Yeah. So. Every single fucking one of these people is being paid deliberately to destroy any and all opposition
now,
to.
Probably there's someone who isn't, but we don't know who that person
is. No, that's what I'm saying. That's why when I'm looking at that study about the 97%,
yeah.
You know, and they say, you know, it's almost 100% of climatologists, mm-hmm. Which, you know, if there's 1,000 climatologists, one of them is going to take donors' trust money.
Sure.
You know, like, of course you're going to make a study that says not. But even when you factor in, like, meteorologists, who are some of the worst offenders of, like, weather's different, duh, and you're fucking, calm it down, asshole.
Stay in your lane.
Calm it down.
Yeah.
But even amongst all of those, nobody is going on record. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the people who are going out and talking and making their stuff public, they are paid. If the people who are, you know, when you go through that 97% study, their claims weren't that climate change is not anthropogenic. Their claims are, in those studies, this is not attributed to anthropogenic climate change. So even those people.
It's not a denial. It's an, this isn't provable.
Exactly.
Or maybe even like slightly relevant after we've gone through the actual study.
Exactly.
We might just be looking at a variable that isn't a piece of this, but that right. doesn't disprove the anthropogenic aspect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know a lot of the information in this episode is, of course, repetitive. I'm sorry.
No.
I know.
It's repetitive with a purpose, though. Like, it's not like you're just saying the same thing over and over again. It's about different people, throughout the story that, you know, you repeat because it's like driving home the point. All of these people are ill, actors. They're bad actors.
Yep.
When you act from a position of bad faith and bad acting, you can't do anything good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what these people are. So repeating stuff is just reinforcing that.
It's the argument that people make so often of like, oh, 97% doesn't mean anything. You think 97% of scientists agreed that we had a heliocentric universe? What about Galileo and all of that stuff? What about the great man theory of science where it's one dude bucking the entire trend? When you go back and you look through all of those different things, you'll find that the reason those great men were bucking trends is because the trends themselves were based on entrenched power.
Yeah.
And entrenched power controlled 97% of science at the time.
Whether it be through the church or the, you know,
exactly.
corrupt state or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
And they were doing exactly, you know, if you want to talk about the flowering of the Renaissance, those were commissioned pieces,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So much of that was, I am telling you, I want this to be true. You make it true. You make it be proved mm-hmm. that this is true. And those great men people were the ones who were like, nah, go fuck yourself. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. As science evolved throughout this time period, it's gotten away from that universal control by powerful interests. And now a scientific consensus means infinitely more than it did 50 years ago, than it did 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So when people give you that, like, well, Galileo was all out on the bun and on his own and all that shit, that's because Galileo was acting in the spirit that the scientific consensus is acting now.
Yeah. And
the
not,
ratios have changed.
And that's not,
that's it.
That's not even taking into account the mythologizing that goes on. Of-
yeah.
Those great men of history
yeah.
and stuff like that. The stuff that's not strictly speaking true.
Right. The only great scientist that I can think of that acted almost utterly singularly without, input from, without like constant input from other scientists, without a constant exchange of information.
Well, it's obviously General Stubblebine.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
No, it was Isaac Newton.
Mm-hmm.
When he wrote Principia Mathematica, that was the only time in scientific history I can think of where it was like, this dude just fucking did that shit by himself.
Mm-hmm.
What an asshole.
Yeah.
So, my point is, I think, pretty clear, right?
I think so.
Did I make it?
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting to me, like, now we've come to the end of this. There's a lot of stuff that I'm shocked he didn't bring up. You know, like the climate gate stuff and
yeah.
Those emails that were misinterpreted and things like that. The hide the decline nonsense.
Right.
Like I expected to hear some of that because, I mean, he's hitting a lot of the normal bases and you'd expect to hear that. And it's interesting that's absent in here. I don't think it's a failing in any way of his or ours. But, you know, there's a lot of things that I expected to come up that didn't. But, yeah, I think your point is very, very well made that this guy, Mark Moran, is an asshole.
He's a complete piece of shit.
And seems to be playing fast and loose. He did give me that great visual metaphor, but...
Man has always been battling the shores.
But that, to me, is that's the example of, like, an accidental good, you know? He's acting in bad faith, but it accidentally, the fruit of that vine...
Yeah.
One of the apples wasn't poisoned.
But I guess we have a website?
We do. It's knowledgefight.com.
I think we have a Twitter.
That's right. @knowledge_fight.
I think we are on Facebook.
That's correct. You can join our group. Go home and tell your mother you're brilliant.
What if you went to iTunes? Would you be able to find us?
Leave a review, subscribe, all that stuff.
Please do.
This has been fun, man. It's very foreign to me, the changing roles and I'm glad we did it, but I'm also glad that next episode we'll switch back.
Yeah. Same here.
Yeah.
This needed to happen, and It does not need to happen again.
Yeah.
but I'll tell you one guy who, though he has metaphorically poisoned an apple, which would kill a guy, he has not literally done that.
Mm-hmm.
That's Mark Moreno.
Sure.
But I'll tell you one guy who technically probably killed a guy, though not necessarily with a poison apple. That's Alex Jones.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.